Hello, and thanks for listening to this podcast. My name is Karen Killaly. I am a partner and head of the employment team at Maples and Calder Ireland, the Maples Group's law firm in Dublin. Some housekeeping to cover off as usual. If you are listening in from your usual podcast app, you'll find any resource documents and speaker bio information in the description. If you've clicked on the media player link sent to you via email, you can find this information in the notes section. As always, this podcast does not constitute legal advice, and if you have a specific situation or question, please seek tailored legal advice from the team. Last but not least, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast series on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. I'm joined by my colleague, Kearney Lungig, who's an associate on the employment law team here at Maples. And today we are discussing the Code of Practice for Employers and Employees on the right to request flexible working and the right to request remote working. So this was published relatively recently on the 6th of March, 2024, and I think it's safe to say that it was long awaited by employers in Ireland. What I would just say before we dive in is that in our experience, we are seeing very, very many employers across really a broad range of sectors very strongly embracing hybrid working and in some sectors, fully remote working practices. So a large majority of the employers that we would work with will have a written remote and flexible working policy, which is typically complementary to their suite of family and medical leave policies. I think it's interesting to note as well that some relatively recently released research from a survey of just over 1,000 Irish professionals commissioned by Morgan McKinley shows that 92% of Irish workers exhibit a strong preference for flexible working of some description. And workers who have hybrid working models express the highest contentment with their work patterns, with just over 59% indicating that they would be willing to forgo pay rises for flexibility. And just over half of nearly 8,000 employees who were surveyed in 2022 by a national university in Ireland said that they experienced some form of hybrid or flexible work. So it's most definitely here to stay. And what we're going to do in this episode is to explain some of the concepts of flexible and remote working. We're going to identify who is eligible to make those requests, how an employer in Ireland should respond upon receiving such a request. We're also going to take a little look at some case law, which is relatively limited so far, given the relatively short history of hybrid and remote working, just really which has emerged, obviously, with enormous strength, both during and after the pandemic. Okay, so Kira, turning to you, can you just explain to us, just tell us about the Code of Practice?
Yes, of course. And as you said, the long-awaited Code of Practice was published last month by the WRC to provide guidance to employees and employers with respect to requests for flexible working and remote working arrangements. And as we said, we've been awaiting the Code of Practice for quite some time now. And now that the Code of Practice is in place, the relevant provisions of the Work-Life Balance and Miscellaneous Provisions Act 2023, which provides employees with the right to make such requests, has now been enacted. There has been a growing focus on such requests in recent years, as we said, in light of the increased prevalence of these arrangements following the COVID-19 pandemic. Might be useful to set out briefly what both these terms mean. So flexible working is a working arrangement where an employee's working hours or working patterns are adjusted. For example, this could include introducing a flexible work schedule, job sharing, or reduced working hours. This can take different forms depending on the nature of the role and or business. For example, part-time, term time, or job sharing arrangements, compressed working hours, or remote working.
Thanks. And so, yes, as you say, they're slightly different. So who's entitled to request these working arrangements?
Any employee can make a request for remote working. So an employee can make a request from their first day of employment and will need to complete a minimum of 6 months continuous employment with the employer before the approved arrangement can actually take effect. On the other hand, flexible working is open only to parents and carers. So an employee must be a parent of a child under 12 years of age or 16 years of age if the child has a disability or a long-term illness, or a carer of a specified person who is in need of significant care for a serious medical reason. This person can be an employee's child, spouse, cohabitant, parent, grandparent, or sibling. Again, an employee may make a request from their first day in the role, but they will need to have 6 months service before the arrangement can begin.
Okay, perfect. That's all clear. So looking at the actual application process for a moment, both of those applications, so one for flexible working, one for remote working, are set out in the code of practice and they're quite similar, but there are some nuances. So with respect to a request for a flexible working arrangement, an employee needs to submit their request in writing as soon as is reasonably practical, but certainly at least 8 weeks before the proposed start date for the arrangement. And that request must include, it must be set out on the prescribed form. It must include the proposed start date, the intended duration, and so forth. What about a request for a remote working arrangement?
A request for remote working follows a similar format, but an employee will also need to set out to their employer that they're confident that they can continue to perform the role remotely to the required standard. So employees must provide their individual specific reasons for making the request. And these might include, for example, reducing a daily commute or their carbon footprint, personal or domestic circumstances, or neurodiversity or special medical needs or circumstances which would favour a quiet working environment or facilities which may not always be available in the office. The application for remote working must also include details of the proposed new working location, including its suitability for the specific role in question, assurances regarding data protection, for example, and an agreement that a risk assessment can be carried out.
Okay, so from an employer's perspective, when they receive a request for flexible working, they need to consider both the needs of the business and the employee's needs when making their decision in respect of that request. And then when it comes to requests for remote working, an employer needs to consider those factors as well as assessing whether the role is suitable for remote working. And that consideration will include factors such as whether the role requires face-to-face interaction, access to equipment, or whether there are specific health and safety issues. And we'll touch on a little bit of case law in a moment, which elaborates on these a little bit. The employer also needs to consider the employee's own suitability to work remotely. So this would include reflecting on factors such as whether the employee has the requisite IT skills, for example, to perform the role remotely, their attendance record, their ability to meet deadlines, their sort of output, whether the employee is on probation can be a relevant factor. You might consider whether it would be suitable where an employee is on a performance improvement plan or where an employee is involved in a disciplinary process. So those are sort of situations where increased supervision might be necessary and therefore a remote working arrangement might not be suitable. So if an employer cannot approve the arrangement that the employee has requested or proposed, then the parties should, as far as possible, consider an alternative arrangement insofar as that is feasible. There's no obligation to do so, but insofar as that is feasible. It's also important to note the deadlines. So an employer is required to respond as soon as practicable to any requests they receive for remote or flexible working, and the response should be given in writing within 4 weeks. This can be extended for a further 4 weeks where there is difficulty assessing the viability of the request. So let's look at the situation where an employee and an employer come to an agreement on a remote or flexible working arrangement. Kira, can you just talk us through what happens? Can these arrangements be altered? Can they be terminated? Just talk us through the process.
Yes, absolutely, no problem. And they can indeed be altered. So if the agreed arrangement requires alteration, the employer and the employee can agree in writing to change these terms. Alternatively, the employer can terminate an agreed working arrangement in certain circumstances, before or after it has started, if they're satisfied that the arrangement would have or is having a substantial adverse effect on the operation of the business. This may be due to lack of staff, the nature of the employee's duties, or seasonal variations in the volume of work. When considering termination of an arrangement, an employer should consider if their reasons for terminating the arrangement are objective, fair, and reasonable. An employee can request by written notice to be returned to their original working arrangement earlier than had originally been agreed, also by providing reasons and a proposed return date.
Perfect. Okay. And it's probably worth reminding employers in Ireland at this point that the employee's redress in relation to an alleged breach of their rights can really only be confined to seeking redress in terms of a breach by the employer of the process of responding to the request for flexible or remote work. So the Workplace Relations Commission, which is sort of the first level court or tribunal in Ireland, which would deal with these claims, does not have any power under the legislation to assess the merits of any decision made by an employer under this legislation. So I suppose an employee can really only challenge the adherence to the processes set out in the code of practice as opposed to the substantive decision making. So bearing that in mind and bearing in mind that we've a relatively limited set of case law from which to draw, can you take us through, Ciara, how the WRC has decided disputes that arise between employers and employees in relation to requests for remote working? And how is that likely to change now with the publication of the Code of Practice?
Well, until now, the WRC has not engaged in an in-depth analysis as to how the employer deals with remote working requests, with the focus being instead on whether the practice implemented by the employer is objectively applied in a non-discriminatory fashion. For example, the recent decision of Priscilla v. MSS followed this exact approach. Amongst the complaints submitted by the part-time former employee in this case was a claim that because of her part-time working status, she had been treated less favourably than comparable full-time employees, specifically where a remote working request was submitted with no opportunity or consideration given to discussing an effective solution or even a trial for adjustments to be made. In its response, the respondent employer highlighted that the role simply could not be conducted on a hybrid basis. The requirement for her to work on site was applied to all comparable employees. And finally, the remote working policy noted that remote working arrangements were a privilege and not a universal benefit or an employee entitlement. In arriving at its decision, the WRC held that due to the fact that the complainant's comparator were treated in the same fashion as she was, the claim for discrimination in respect of the remote working request could not succeed. Notably, the WRC did not analyse whether the refusal was based on sound reasoning. This decision was issued in November 2023, so interestingly, it does predate the Code of Practice, and we therefore expect that the WRC will engage in more in-depth analysis going forward by reference to the obligations set out in the Code of Practice.
Yeah, so it's really clear that this is an issue. I mean, as you say, that was a case that predated the Code of Practice, but this issue isn't going away, and it's likely to gain more prevalence in the coming years now that there is this statutory right to request work arrangements that are flexible or remote. And as many listeners may recall, the earlier versions of the draft legislation had stated that an employer could refuse a request for remote working on what were termed business grounds. And there was a non-exhaustive list, I think, of 13 reasons which were originally included in the draft legislation, and that was sort of roundly criticised. So where we have landed now is that the Code of Practice is a lot more high level. Plus, it does not sort of give any teeth to that requirement to make a fair decision or a substantively fair decision. So it will be interesting to see how the case law develops in this area. And I suppose our guidance and recommendation at this point is that employers in Ireland should certainly familiarise themselves with the Code of Practice. It's a useful tool. It helps employers to navigate any requests that they might receive. And as always with these statutory codes of practice, they are admissible in evidence, and employers are sort of measured against the benchmarks that are set out in the codes of practice when any dispute is being adjudicated upon. So just turning to, I suppose, what we have seen a lot in the market, may be receding slightly now, but the efforts of employers to bring people back, to bring workers back either on a full-time basis to the office or on a hybrid basis post-COVID has been challenging for some employers and not for others, perhaps. Are there any recent developments, Ciara, that you want to highlight that are helpful in this regard?
Well, interestingly, in February of this year, a senior executive working in an aircraft leasing firm launched high court proceedings seeking an injunction against his employer on this topic. The employee complained that his employer was demanding that he return to work from the Dublin office for a number of days each week, as opposed to spending all of his working time working remotely from his home in County Clare. This was a rather high value case, as the employee was alleging that his employer had threatened to not pay him his €200,000 annual bonus due to his refusal to return to the office. The senior executive employee alleged that his employer had not raised any issue with him in respect of his working from Clare, and he had done so for several years at this point. The employee rejected his employer's claim that he was required under company policy to work from the Dublin office, and alleged that the refusal to pay his significant bonus, which he alleged was not discretionary, was wrongful on that basis. This case was privately settled, so unfortunately we didn't get a chance to see how things would play out in a public hearing. However, it's clear that disagreements involving remote working arrangements and, as you say, return to the office policies can have significant value for all parties concerned.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose one thing just to bear in mind, and I'm going to mention just in a moment a UK Employment Tribunal decision, but one thing I suppose to bear in mind is that while we're very mindful of the fact that there is a process to be followed and that the redress of the employee is really confined to making sure that the employer properly responds, we do need to keep in mind that employees may on occasion assert that a refusal to grant remote or flexible working could be related to a discriminatory ground. So it's very important that employers are fair and transparent in any event and consistent in their decision making regarding applications for remote and flexible working, and that they are properly looked at, carefully looked at and assessed by reference to objective criteria, as opposed to anything that could be construed as perhaps a protected characteristic. So important just to keep that in mind. And as I mentioned, there's an interesting case that was handed down, I think, in November of 2023 from a UK employment tribunal. It's the decision in Wilson versus Financial Conduct Authority. And this individual failed in her claim against her employer in relation to their refusal to grant her a remote working arrangement. So she was quite a senior person, earning, as was reported, £140,000 per year in their role, working for the FCA. And in this situation, the employee had submitted a flexible work request, requesting that she be permitted to work away from the office as she had been doing since the beginning of the pandemic. And she made that request in accordance with the applicable legislation in that jurisdiction. And it was just a very interesting debate about the merits of the flexible working arrangement in that decision. And we'll have a copy of the decision in our show notes. So the FCA told the employee that they recognised that she had in fact been working well from home, and she'd built effective relationships with colleagues despite not meeting in person and so forth. However, the reason that the FCA refused to permit the employee to work entirely from home was because they felt that approving the request could have a detrimental impact on performance and or quality of output, because the employee would not be attending face-to-face training sessions, departmental away days, meetings, nor would she be generally engaging face-to-face at any point in terms of training her team members and helping them grow their careers. So additionally, the FCA had said that her ability to input into management strategy meetings, you know, attending remotely and be involved in in-person collaboration would also be negatively impacted. So they're kind of universal considerations. I think it was interesting that this was ventilated. And the FCA reasoned that while the complete remote working arrangement had suited the employee and she had performed well, the effect of this arrangement could not just be viewed through the very linear lens of her own perspective. So that's borrowing the FCA's words. It was interesting what the tribunal judge observed, deciding in favour of the SCA. And the tribunal judge observed that there is a very limited ability in a fully remote working arrangement to, and I quote, observe and respond to nonverbal communication which may arise outside of the context of formal events, but which nonetheless forms an important part of working with other individuals. This is particularly so when considering the senior position held by the claimant. So very interesting insight, albeit from a case that was handed down in from the Employment Tribunal in England. Okay, so for now, thank you for listening to the Maples Group Employment Law Podcast. If you have any questions or queries on any of the points covered today or on employment legal issues in general in Ireland, please do get in touch with us. We'll have a copy of the Code of Practice and some of the case law that we've mentioned in our show notes. Thanks for listening and subscribing.